Disclaimer: this episode contains cursing, strong opinions, and feelings that may not be shared by the masses at large. If these things aren't your cup of tea, feel free to change the podcast to a different one. We won't be offended. Thank you. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Oh, just magical. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
It's a sort of gray day in my neighborhood, but it's springtime. It's muddy season. I've never seen so much mud in my entire life.
That sounds fun.
It's because I grew up, well, I mean, I grew up in the city, with you,
That's true.
or in that general area. And then now I live here in the mountains of rural nowhere, and it's pretty special.
Where
Like,
there's
there's
mud.
just fucking mud everywhere. Like, there's so much mud. I don't understand. Like, why? Why is there so much mud?
Yeah, I don't know. We don't even get rain, so mud is not a thing.
Yeah, we haven't really gotten much rain. It's just all the residual, like a snow melt, right? So the snow is melting and there's just mud, and it's muddy snow, and there's slushy type situation happening. It's really unpleasant. A lot of people, however, seem to be thoroughly thrilled. That was an alliterative action I did not mean to make, but it happened anyway. Yes, thoroughly thrilled at the thought. I'm a nerd now. Of like running around in the mud. They purposely get in their cars and get mud all over their cars and like go four wheeling in the mud and like splash around in the mud and get caked in mud. And this is the thing that people do that I don't understand.
Yeah, not a thing that I understand either.
I don't get it. But you know what? Like, if it makes you happy, I'm not gonna judge you out loud for it. I mean,
Welcome to the
maybe.
We Discuss the Weather podcast.
Exactly. But yeah, no, I'm just saying. Before we get into the whole, all of the things I have to say about this episode of Angel and get super creepy in my own like lust after how beautiful David Boreanaz is and just all of the seasons of Buffy. He's so even in future episodes when he's maybe not so nice, he's still just like, why are you so beautiful? Even when he's like pale, like they whitened up his makeup extra hard to make sure that he was super evil and pale. Yeah, I just can't get over it. But yeah, before we get all into that, people where I live like to roll around in the mud and I don't get it. That's cool. Fine.
It's fine. So I live in a giant city where there is no such thing as
Yeah.
snow or mud.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, we forgot to introduce ourselves. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Sarah. And this
And
is She Saved the World a Lot, where
yep.
we talk about weather.
Apparently the weather and it's changing cycles on our earth and environments.
Right. But more importantly, we talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer and its connections to all things in life and badass women who kick ass and take names.
Exactly. Even though this particular episode, season one, episode seven, entitled Angel, is mostly about David Boreanaz. And for anyone new, you'll get to know my deep appreciation for looking at David Boreanaz. It's super objectifying and like really uncomfortable and like not cute at all. And I need to like chill. But he's just, it's like a work of art. I can't help it.
It's fine. Just because you have a shirt with him on it and leggings that are covered with his face
I have none of those things, by the
an I
way.
Heart Angel
She's
poster over
being
your bed, it's
ironic.
totally fine. I am
She's
never
being
ironic.
ironic. There may, I might have, however, some episodes or episodes. Magazines? What are those things called? Issues. Issues. Like, I think
Issues
I have
of
one
magazines?
magazine, issues of magazines. One of which features Buffy and David Boreanaz. It's tucked somewhere away in the things I saved from my childhood, from my 90s adolescence. There's probably some magazine clippings. I'm 100% certain. But I'm also 100% certain that I have a box of magazine clippings of, like, you know, from YM and Teen magazine of all the, you know, because we didn't have the internet in the 90s, guys. I mean, we did, but not like we have it now. It was not, we still had to rely on YM. And I don't even think we had Teen Vogue yet.
I don't think so.
No, we had some
of us couldn't get onto the internet until after everyone else in our house was asleep, because otherwise, if somebody tried to pick up the phone and make a phone call, it ruined your connection.
That's true. Yeah. Oh, the things the kids today don't understand.
Right?
Exactly. But should we talk about Angel?
I mean, can I stop you?
You talking about Angel? You couldn't stop me, not even if you tried. But this episode is so great for so many reasons. One of which, it starts out again in the cavernous underground church lair of the master, who's trapped in a CGI bubble below the earth.
Dear old Fruit Punch Mouth is back.
Dear old Fruit Punch Mouth is back. And he has creepy child, right? Because nothing is creepier than an evil child. Creepy child, the anointed one, down in his lair. And creepy child is like throwing pebbles into the pool of blood that just exists in this place as Darla in her school uniform, because every trope on the planet, comes down into the lair, and the master's bitching about how the slayer's killing vampires because that's her job. And he's like, oh, you know, such and such was a strong one. And they're like, oh, can we kill the slayer? And everyone's super dramatic.
Okay, but here's my question.
Yeah.
So we've seen Darla now twice, right?
Yes.
First episode and now. Both times she's wearing your classic private school girl uniform.
But slut it up, of course. Have... not your classic actual private Catholic schoolgirl uniform.
Okay, well, as someone who went to a private Catholic school, no, that's kind of every girl rolled, I mean, except for me because I wore jeans, but every girl rolled their skirt that short.
Oh,
and, you know, tried to make their outfit. Well, because you didn't hem it that short, you just rolled it from the waist. So anytime somebody who, you know, might possibly be like, yo, I can see your ass cheeks, was gonna come by, you could just tug, 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 and it's, you know, thing, and then you can go back and, you know, roll that shit up.
Seems like
all
a lot
the way
of work.
To your shit. Again, I only had one skirt all 4 years of high school because and it ended up being too short because I grew 4 inches freshman year.
Gotcha.
To end up over 5 feet tall. Yay me. And so I had to take it out to the hem. But I wore the one pair of pants we were allowed to wear because I have no good schoolgirl like fantasy.
Right.
But no, does she have any other clothes?
No.
Or does she wash this one a lot? Is it really smelly? Or does she have like a whole closet full of...
well, vampires don't sweat.
For her age, school. But even if you don't sweat, like, I don't really sweat. But I still feel like if I wore the same outfit for weeks on end, it would be real stank.
I don't understand.
Just
well,
from
here's
life.
The other thing that I don't get is that why, given what we find out later about Darla and her whole life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be like in flashbacks in Angel or like future episodes, but it, whatever. The fact that she would just only have the one outfit, like she wouldn't switch it up, makes no sense to me. Right? Like it makes right. No sense to me that any human being, I mean, I know people who wear like versions of the same outfit every day, but like not the exact same outfit every day. Because again,
yeah.
Like, it's just, variety is the spice of life? I don't know.
And it's not like she was turned as a vampire when she was 17 at a parochial school in, like, New England. All right?
No.
Chick's, like, 24 and, you know, hundreds of years old.
Right.
So the whole teenage Catholic schoolgirl look is,
I mean, even I guess less technically appropriate. That storyline of Darla had not yet developed. It had not yet come.
Yeah, but it's obvious that that chick is not in high school.
Right. She's
regardless.
She says something about, well, anyway, in this episode, I think late in a later point, she says something about being like hundreds of years old or something. And it's like, well, then why are you wearing the same Catholic schoolgirl outfit? Regardless, it's the Catholic schoolgirl outfit trope that I think is the really bothersome portion.
The problematic part, right? Not the fact that she only has one
outfit. She only has one outfit. Anyway, okay. So like the master's all pissed and he's like, how do we kill her? And then the little child comes up with like super fucked up. He's like, oh, I'd ruin her and blah this and, you know, because creepy kid. So the master's all mad about, you know, Buffy. And for some reason, but yet for some reason, he's like, no, Darla, don't kill her. Because Darla's like, I'll kill her. And he's just like, nah, we're not going to do that. And then we cut to, of course, the Bronze, right? Where they are having truly the most horrifying, horrifying event that any establishment that serves food or drink could have. Which is
the cockroach stomping?
It's the cockroach annual. Yeah. It's the annual, okay? Meaning it happens once a year. Cockroach killing party, wherein if, because they're like, I guess fumigating the Bronze, so like why, like I guess the cockroaches know that the fumigation is coming, so they're all like coming out now,
like it's on their schedule, and they're like, oh shit, it's the 12th, we best skedaddle.
So everybody's at the Bronze. Willow and Buffy are talking about boys, of course, and that boy, and they're not in no subtle way talking about Angel, even though nobody's actually mentioning his name, right? And how intriguing and mysterious he is. In the meantime, Willow is pining over Xander, who is out dancing on the dance floor in the absolute worst possible, like, white guy dancing. You can't see my air quotes, but I'm using them. Situation, like trying to hit on girls, being awkward. Cordelia once again eviscerates Xander because he bumps into her and her $200 shoes. And then Xander, of course, makes the toxic comment. He's like, oh yeah, thanks Cordelia for being so lovely. I don't know what everybody's talking about. That outfit doesn't make you look like a hooker. And I'm like, oh cool, right? Because back in the 90s, I guess it was cool to shame sex workers.
Yeah,
it was never cool to shame sex workers.
And if anybody, it wasn't,
for to be clear.
But if anybody is going to, of course, it would be Xander, because he's kind of a douche.
Yeah, because Xander has that toxic masculinity thing going. Even though my
heart,
we all know my teenage heart didn't quite see all that at the time and loved him for his patheticness and his adorableness. Not the point. So
the point is,
what
the fuck's up with the cockroaches?
Why? Oh, and apparently if you kill a cockroach, you get a free drink. So here's my question, right? Are we talking about, because since they are teenagers, right? A free drink equals a free soda, right?
Yeah.
Because that is what those establishments serve to underage minors.
Okay. Shirley Temples, Rob Roy's, you know, to zhuzh them up.
A lemonade, if you will, or a Arnold Palmer. But my question is, there is no restaurant that I can think of that once you order a soda does not already give you free refills. So
yeah,
my question is, what is the incentive for anyone not drinking alcohol to kill cockroaches, right? Mm-hmm. And frankly, I don't know that I'd go to a bar and kill cockroaches even if they offered me a free drink for every cockroach, because that is the most vile thing I can think of.
I mean, let's be real. The Bronze is almost as problematic as Xander, because A, it's both an adult bar place with, you know, pool tables and obvious grown-ups who are drinking, and B, the place where 16-year-olds congregate on a Tuesday night. So it already has like that check against it. And then the fact that, you know, they don't really seem to card people, have a massive cockroach problem, and have what, like 16 people murdered on the dance floor
constantly
like a month and a half ago and are still just like, come back tomorrow.
Yep.
Mop blood, get free chicken nuggets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes
that
no
place
sense.
Has issues.
The Bronze makes no sense whatsoever. So anyway, Buffy gets bummed. Oh, we forgot to mention the master decides upon the suggestion of the little tiny creepy anointed one child that they should send the three after Buffy, which is presumably a trio of troublemakers. And, you know, super badass evil killer vampire dudes who are like bigger and badder than other vampires who are no match for the Slayer, who is killing all of the vampires because that's her job. And Buffy's badass.
Right.
So anyway, Buffy's like walking home from the Bronze, right? And what happens is she gets attacked by the three. And she makes like a funny quip about like, oh, I'm tired, I don't feel like fighting you guys. And then she realizes that she may be slightly in over her head because they're all wearing like fucking suits of armor and are vampires. Which is not something right. You see every day on the streets of Sunnydale. They're not your regular run-of-the-mill vampires, right? They're special super vampires from medieval times. And who should come to the rescue but hot as fuck, David Boreanaz playing Angel. I'm sorry. I can't help it.
It's fine. You already disclaimed it, so it's okay.
My inner Xander is coming out. He's so beautiful. It's truly spectacular. He's a work of art. I said it before and I'll say it again. So anyway, David Boreanaz, the love of my life, as Angel, comes in and like helps save Buffy from the three, but he doesn't kill the three because the three again are like super strong uber vamps, so they run away
wearing chainmail and shit.
Yeah. And so they run to Buffy's house like super fast, and as they're running into Buffy's house, Buffy yells to Angel, oh my god, come on, you know, get in here, right? Which is a throwaway line, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like, you know, we got to get in the house. And then they get in the house and shut the door. And while the vampire is able to get his hand like through the door, which means he can technically cross the threshold of Buffy's house, she slams the door on his hand, and then he like pulls his hand back out. And then Angel very obviously states, don't worry, vampires can't come in unless they're invited. And Buffy says, I've heard that, but I've never tested the theory. Which, one, I find personally impossible. Like, how it is possible that Buffy has been the Slayer for, what, like 2 years now? Right? Going on about 2 years. And a vampire has never chased her to the threshold of her house. And then just,
if you feel like the fact that she's patrolling, so she's usually patrolling outside away from her house, that kind of makes sense, because the other ones, like, you know, if you think back to our prequel times, right, she's fighting them all at school, which is public property,
I guess,
or she's fighting them, you know, like on the street away from her place of residence. So maybe this is the first time that she encountered a vampire that she couldn't kill before this close to her actual domicile.
Interesting.
I mean, it's still stupid as shit, but it establishes the whole, you know, foreshadowing of what is to come.
Like, why the hell they're talking about whether or not a vampire can come in unless they're invited, right?
Because she just invited a vampire.
She just unknowingly invited a vampire in. But we're pretending like we don't know Angel's a vampire right now. And at the time, we didn't, because although anyone with reasonable foreshadowing skills could figure out that there was something mysterious about him, he only ever shows up at night. I mean, let's be real.
I mean, that was a dead giveaway from like the second episode.
Was it a dead giveaway? Is that what it was?
Uh-huh. Yes.
So anyway, they run into Buffy's house, right? Angela manages to get swiped by like one of the vampires who has Wolverine claws for some reason. And so he's all like bloody in his rib cage, which gives him a absolutely perfectly reasonable reason to take his shirt off in Buffy's kitchen, much to the delight of my 15 and nearly 40-year-old heart.
Well, because, you know, she's like, oh, a boo-boo, yeah. Let's take your shirt off so I can fix that.
Mm-hmm. I have to bandage up your lower rib cage, which means you need to take your shirt off entirely.
Right. Don't just pull it out. Nope. Take that sucker off.
That sucker it needs to be off. And yeah. And so anyway, she bandages him up in the sexiest possible manner. They're like 5 millimeters from each other's face, right? As they're talking, and she's bandaging him. Again, I'm using air quotes. And then Buffy's mom comes home, right? In the middle of their very close bandaging party in the kitchen. And so Buffy's like trying. Buffy is so bad. For somebody who has to consistently lie, Buffy is so bad at lying to her mom. Like, I was not good at lying to my parents, and I very rarely did it. But like, if I did lie to my parents ever as a teenager, I was not as bad at it as Buffy is as bad as lying to her mother, right? Like, agreed. She is so over the top. Like, let me make you tea. And her mother is, of course, immediately suspicious, as every mother whose child is ever overly nice to them is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then for some reason, like, Angel comes out, right? Which gives us, I guess, an opportunity for Buffy's mom to meet Angel, her potential love interest.
Sure. Well, I think it also is going to set up plot point in the future of this episode, because Buffy's mom has to know who Angel is for later things to happen.
That's true. That is
true. So that's pretty much the reason he comes out.
Yeah. At the time, it seems extremely illogical, though, that he would come out and not just stay hidden in a spot where, like, Angel's number one skill is hiding in the shadows.
That and brooding are the two things he's best at.
Right. And so he comes out, Buffy makes up some outrageous lie about him being her history tutor, right? Like, any mother on the face of the earth would believe that a human being that fucking gorgeous is at some teenage girl's house late at night is tutoring her in history. Yeah, right.
Right. Especially when that dude looks about 25. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, no way. I, you know, as a history major and history teacher, trust me when I say no one in the history department looks like Angel. No one. 0% of the history department.
And they definitely would not be going to a teenager's house at night to tutor them.
So. That would have been super frowned upon. Even in the 90s, they were like, don't.
Well, I mean, she says he's a college student, which I guess is supposed to make it okay that he's, you know, over 21 and at her house after dark on a school night. But, you know.
So anyway, Buffy's mom's like, okay, well, yeah, you need to go home now, right? Because Buffy's mom's a good mom.
Go, mom.
And then immediately goes upstairs and in no way checks to see if he actually goes home, which gives Buffy the opportunity to just fake like he goes home. And then they creep back upstairs together. And Buffy's mom has seemingly no idea.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, hilarious. So anyway, Angel and Buffy spend the night together in Buffy's room and have awkward conversation about the three and how they're possibly still out there lurking, and makes this...
Well, she also accuses him of stalking her, you know, because he happens to appear right when she gets attacked, and she, you know, seemed to sense him earlier at the Bronze and yada yada.
Oh yeah.
But still, you know, that then he has no problem with a guy that she thinks may be a stalker staying the night in her room.
Right.
Totally cool. Right. It's fine.
It's fine. And you know what? It's probably because she's mesmerized by his beautiful face. And that is a weakness. And I admit to it.
Okay. But can you look down from his beautiful face for
yes,
a minute?
Yes, I can.
To our and discovery, like, the fact that Angel has cute. A tattoo.
Oh, yes.
That looks like an angel, and little baby Sarah watching this went, what a douchebag. He's got his name is Angel and he has a tattoo of an angel. Like,
meanwhile, little baby this Sarah did the exact thing Buffy did, which was be like, he's so beautiful and I love him.
Yeah, and see, I love me some tattoos. Full sleeves, full body, whatever. We know I have many of them. But even, like, upon first watching, I was like, what kind of douche gets the tattoo of basically themselves on themselves? Angel. That's like Steve-O getting a tattoo of his own face on his back. Like,
I don't think it's that.
I mean, at least get a tattoo of a devil, Angel. Fuck, put the devil on your shoulder. I mean, damn. Yeah.
I mean, I guess.
Mm.
Let's talk about
it's
the
fine.
Fact that
you were just distracted by the fact that he's hot.
The fact that he's so beautiful. It's truly pathetic. Like, I'm just the worst human being on the planet. But no, so also, here's the other thing, though. The angel doesn't look like an angel. It looks like... It actually, what it reminds me of is the creepy, like, roller skating flying monkeys in Return to Oz. That's...
Are you talking about the Wheelers or the... Oh, no, they're actual... The roller skating monkeys. Yeah.
The creepiest, just all hell. Return to Oz with teeny tiny baby Firouza Balk.
Best Oz movie.
It was so scary. It was so deeply terrifying. That movie scarred me seriously. And I watched it again recently and I was like, this is sort of weird and not as scary as I remember. But those wheelie things were absolutely as scary as I remember. I will tell you what. But yeah, so his tattoo changes over those series. Because
I think they figured that it was stupid and douchey, and they changed.
Because at some point, Angel went to a tattoo artist again, and the tattoo artist was an actual professional. Like, maybe when he moved to L.A., right, he actually met Kat Von D and was like, and Kat Von D was like, no, we're not doing this anymore. I'm gonna fix this shit. But yeah, no, like... The original tattoo, when he first takes it off, is, like, a weirdly shaped, and that is what it reminds me of. Like, it's got wings, but it's, like, not... It's a weird tattoo. It's not a good tattoo.
It's not one I would go for.
Absolutely not. So I'm glad he met a better tattoo artist in later episodes and fixed that shit. So anyway... Angel sleeps on Buffy's floor, right, upstairs, because he's a gentleman. And however, they do slip into the awkward conversation that when Buffy's, like, laying in bed, she's like, do you snore? And he very slyly slips in that he doesn't know because it's been a very long time since someone's been in a position to find out.
Right,
which is like such a line that totally worked on me and Buffy. But yeah, so Angel spends the night, Buffy tells everyone in the library the next day, because no one ever goes to class at Sunnydale High School if they're in the Scooby Gang. that Angel spent the night and he was a perfect gentleman and he's a dreamboat, la-di-da. But they still, like, don't know who he is. So everyone's like, what the hell's going on, right?
Right. Why is a hot older guy showing up and then sleeping?
Yeah, and Xander is, of course, like, how could you do that? This is, he's trying to get in your pants, right? Xander's calling out Angel for playing the game that he himself is actually trying to play, right? Which is like, do anything to impress a girl. Meanwhile, Giles is like, oh, hey, you know that gang of three vampires that attacked Buffy? Like, they're kind of a big deal. And it's kind of some serious shit. It's like, not great. And then Willow's like,
we don't have to worry because they're not along for this world. Yeah. So it's fine.
I mean, you know, it's still Buffy. So Giles is like, oh, the master's super pissed. Now we gotta, like, you know, make sure that you don't die from being encountered with these creepy guys. And Xander is still focused on, like, Angel and how he shouldn't be near Buffy, even though that makes no actual sense to anyone but Xander. Right.
Hi, Xander. Pot, kettle. Mm-hmm. What's up?
So, yeah. So, meanwhile, the three are like, oh, we didn't kill the Slayer. And the Master's like, you know, chops some heads off and then gets three more of this group. Because it's not actually just three of them. There's, like, a whole fucking warrior army. And so then in Giles's attempt to, like, make sure that Buffy doesn't get killed by the three, he closes the library and then they do lots of training with, like, sticks and, you know, medieval, weaponry, because that makes sense.
But again, it's fine because nobody goes into the library anyway.
Not ever.
Ever.
Right. And so in the meantime, Angel is apparently staying at Buffy's house all day, right? Which again makes no sense from a logistical point of view. Like, we, like,
well, no, Buffy says he needs to stay in case the guys are out there, they could attack him, and of course he's way less, you know, like, able to fight them off because he's just a regular person.
Why can't he go home in the daytime? Right? Like, he stays at her house all day long. Now, we know why he can't go home in the daytime, right? But, like, she comes back at night after a whole day at school and Angel is still in her bedroom, right? And this is, like, absolutely normal to her. And in no way weird, right? Like, he didn't go to a hospital. Like, one of the logics is, right, he's injured. He can't go outside, right? Why didn't he just go to a hospital? It does, however, set up the perfect scenario in which Buffy can mistakenly think that Angel read her diary, which is all about him, because he's so hot.
Right.
and so there's a hilarious and brief monologue by Sarah Michelle Gellar wherein she talks about how A does not, in fact, stand for Angel. It stands for Ahmed, who's a charming foreign exchange student. And, you know, then Angel professes that he didn't read her diary. He just was hanging out in her room all day, which is so much less creepy. Okay. So basically, Angel's like, I can't stop thinking about you. You're so beautiful and I'm in love with you. And Buffy's like, oh, I'm in love with you. And then they start making out. And then he's like, I can't be around you. And she's like, why? And then, oh my God, it's his vampire face. Because Angel's actually a vampire. And,
spoiler.
Yeah, I know. Spoiler. So Buffy, like, screams. Angel jumps out the window. David Boreanaz is somehow still hot with his vampire face. I don't know how he does it. And Joyce comes running in and Buffy's like, oh, it's nothing. It was just a shadow. I didn't scream bloody murder just now. It's fine. So, bum, 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 we found out the big secret, Angel's a vampire. Right? Which is, like, terrible. Mm-hmm. It makes no sense. Because one minute they were kissing, and then the next minute he was a vampire. And, Buff- and then Xander, of course, jumps in with the cool, like, oh my god, how could you be kissing a vampire? Gross. So...
When really what he wants to say is, why aren't you kissing me, Buffy?
Why aren't you making out
kiss with me instead?
I want to be making out with you. Giles is like saying like it's impossible for a vampire to be good, right? There's no in between. There's the person, there's the demon. Right? So Buffy, everybody's confused. Cordelia's having a fucking conniption across the way because some girl is wearing the same dress as she is. Right? So we just needed to insert a little bit of like Cordelia shallowness levity into the situation because we're all so shocked that Angel is a vampire. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, we get a little bit of backstory about Angel. Angel shows up in his beautifully furnished sub-basement boiler room apartment.
Yeah.
He definitely walks into a door that appears to be down in a boiler room or like in an underground parking garage, right? With exposed pipes, right? Basic. And then he walks into an apartment, a fully furnished apartment with like mood lighting and antiques. And, like, art. So Angel's clearly a very strange vampire.
Mm-hmm.
Also, how has no one noticed that there is a beautifully furnished apartment in, like, a sub-basement boiler room? Which apparently has one window, as we find out. Because when he walks in to the boiler room apartment, Darla's there. Wearing her schoolgirl uniform. And she gives off some, you know, shit about how Angel's so pathetic. And, you know, he's a vampire. And then she opens the one window that Angel has and he jumps out of the light, right? Even though the light has apparently no effect on her. It's fine. And so she's basically like, Darla's like, oh, this is your real nature, like you're a vampire. She does the whole like sexy, like you're meant to eat people thing. Stop being good, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, so like Darla does this whole, you know, thing about, so clearly she and Angel have known each other for a while, right?
Yeah. It's obvious she's got a thing for mm-hmm. the Angel.
And who wouldn't? So.
I mean me, but.
Okay, except you. Because you're weird.
Yeah.
So we do some Buffy Scooby Gang research, right? We cut to the next scene where there's Scooby Gang research. And they're trying to figure out, like, what Angel's deal is. And Willow's being, like, you know. The adorable best friend. Meanwhile, Giles is like, oh. And then he, so they're like reading about Angel, right? And he's like, and Jealous, the one with the angel face. Because yes, because obviously, right? It is written
right, he's so
in
pretty.
200-year-old scripture, right? That his mm-hmm. face.
But of course, also how convenient that we just happen to have books that are like, oh, by the way, there's this, you know, 200 and whatever how many years old vampire, and here's his entire fucking backstory.
Yeah. Well, it's because Giles has access to the Watcher Diaries, right? So presumably this whole mm-hmm. time, Giles is also keeping his own Watcher Diaries.
Dear Diary, God damn, Buffy doesn't fucking listen. Did she just follow my instructions for once? Why does she make this so difficult? Also, what is up with that fucking mock turtleneck tank top she wears? Talk to you tomorrow, Diary.
Yes, exactly. I'm sure that is what Giles' Watcher Diaries write like.
But they always end up with PPS, fuck, I got hit by over the head with something and have a headache now. I need a drink.
I have another concussion.
Okay. So used to be bad. Now he's good. Doesn't hang out with other vampires. Right. Fuck my life, because he is self-loathing.
Doesn't hit on people.
So of course Buffy can be like, "Oh, see, it's fine. I can totally make out with his vampy bumpy face."
So they find out. Yes, all this background about Angel. Right. Then we cut to back in the underground candlelit church devastation. Right. Darla, as it turns out, the master, I guess, did let Darla kill the three or like something, because they failed to kill Buffy and Angel or whatever. So then Darla's like, "I'll go kill Angel." And the master's like, "No, you can't kill Angel because some dumb shit reason." Right. And Darla's like, "How about Angel kills Buffy and comes back into the fold?" And the master's like, "Yeah, we're going to do that." So Darla somehow thinks she can convince Angel to kill Buffy, right? And meanwhile, Buffy and Willow are talking about boys again and how she is all in love with Angel, but he's a vampire, so she has to kill him and blah, blah, blah. And then Willow's like, "I'm so in love with Xander and I, you know, wish he would just like, you know, be in love with me." And so basically Willow and Buffy are talking about boys. And then for some reason, Darla is eavesdropping on this conversation at the high school, because she had some compulsion to go to the high school, I guess, presumably to kill Buffy, who's always at the high school.
Well, yeah. And we know that she definitely wants to kill Buffy, because she's asked the master multiple times, "Please, can I come pick up?"
So Darla's eavesdropping on their conversation about whether or not Buffy's going to kill Angel and whether or not Willow's ever going to speak up and talk about Xander. And so Buffy's conflicted and Darla's listening to this whole thing. So Darla decides that the best course of action is to go to Buffy's house, fake like she's a student, even though Darla also looks like she's 25, right? And tell Joyce that she's tutoring Buffy in Revolutionary War history, because that's what her family goes back to those times. Which makes me giggle.
Which, you mean, she's not
because
wrong.
Everybody's family goes just back to those times, right? Because we all have ancestors that lived during the American Revolutionary War. It doesn't matter where they lived. The way she phrases it is so hilarious to me. She's like, "My family goes back all the way back to then." And it's like, yeah, everybody's family does. Like, that's the nature of ancestry.
Yeah. Also, by family, you mean you.
Also, Darla's family absolutely goes back way further, we find out in a much later season. Joyce, fooled by Darla's ruse and very convincing Catholic schoolgirl outfit, even though Buffy doesn't go to a Catholic school, she goes to a public school. Joyce invites her in, blah, blah, blah. And Darla immediately bites Joyce. Almost immediately bites Joyce. As it so happens, because Angel is stalking Buffy, he's walking by the house right when Darla bites Joyce's mom and Joyce screams. Or sorry, Buffy's mom, Joyce. Right? So then Angel runs into the house, right? Breaks in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And is like conflicted about whether or not, because he can smell Joyce's blood, and Darla's like, "Oh, you should eat Joyce," and Angel's like, "Oh no, I can't," but he's tempted. So Darla leaves, and right as Darla leaves, Buffy walks into the room. Angel has changed into his vampire face because presumably the smell of blood has overcome him, and it's Buffy's mom's blood. And that, I don't know if that has an extra effect. So Buffy comes in, sees this, freaks out, is like, oh, he's hurt my mom. Now I definitely can kill him, right? But first they go to the hospital to make Joyce is, sure mm-hmm. Joyce is okay because Joyce is fine, right? And then for some reason, the doctors were under the impression that Joyce fainted and landed on a barbecue fork. And that is the only explanation for her neck injury in a town where people are constantly bitten by vampires.
Right. I feel like in this town, again, they accept the weirdest fucking note. Like, band of roving PCP gang, you know, attacks the Bronze and slaughters like 10 people on the dance floor. You know, principal mauled by and eaten alive in his office. No one even fucking mentioned that. Like, what cover story? What wild hyenas burst out of zoo, got themselves all the way to the high school, snuck in, and ate Principal Flutie without anybody uh-huh. seeing that yeah. shit? I mean, I
people
feel like
Sunnydale accept so much.
Middle-aged woman trips and falls into dishwasher and landing on barbecue fork is one of the more plausible things that they've come up with to write off the shit that happens in this yeah. town.
They really do a pretty excellent job of coming up with the most ridiculous excuses.
Which is why I like later on when Principal Snyder shows up and I don't remember what season it is, but he's like, I don't know, fuck, make something uh-huh. up, you know? Lab explosion, sewer gas, yeah. whatever. Like, I guess basically that's what they do 24/7 in this town is justify mm-hmm. shit. Mm-hmm.
So Buffy's like super uber pissed now, right? So now we have a montage of like Buffy tells Giles, I'm going to go kill Angel. Giles is like, Angel's probably not that easy to kill. He's over 200 years old and has faced the three with you and survived. So like, it seems like he's actually kind of an uber vamp himself, right? And Buffy's like, well, I'm uber Buffy and I'm going to go kill him. The end. Darla, in the meantime, is like crawling all over Angel like a stripper trying to convince him to kill Buffy. And Angel's just sitting there in his apartment until, right. and then they get like a little.
She'll never love yeah. you now. She'll never understand. Yeah. Come to my dark side. Blah, 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 right. blah, blah.
Lots of that type of shit. Angel slams her against the wall because, you know, the sex and violent overlap type shit with vampires that's a common vampire trope has to be, you know, just made clear in the scene, right? That this is all very confusing and mm-hmm. violent and sexy and whatever. Angel's breathing heavily.
But you know what else is confusing?
It's Darla's breathing heavily. There's just a lot of just heavy breathing and intensity. What else yeah. is confusing?
The fact that if Angel had wanted to kill Joyce and drain her blood and make her, you know, as Spike later puts it, a happy meal mm-hmm. on legs, he had an entire day in that right. house when Buffy was right. at school. And we don't know Joyce's schedule. Does she work full-time? Is she working part-time? Does she stay home? But there had to have been overlap. Yeah. Or even you know, when Buffy was asleep and he could use his one of his two superpowers, stealth, to you know sneak out and take little sips right. of Joyce without being found hunched over the bleeding right. body. So the fact that Buffy goes from, you know, I want to eat your face and like jump on your bare ass to, oh, snap, you just tried to eat my mom is pretty, like, it's irrational to say the least. You know, it's not like she found him like fangs deep in her mom and then was like, that would give her justification. But, and the fact that, you know, Joyce says, oh, your friend from, you know, school attacked me. Right. That's cool.
Well, Joyce says, damn. So the, she says something about like, it was after your friend came over, right?
And it was yeah, your study friend. Like her.
So Buffy assumes it's Angel, mm-hmm. right? But so Buffy decides she's going to go kill Angel, right? because he attacked her mom in the most illogical way ever. And so after the heavy breathing of Darla and Angel, like Darla trying to convince Angel using heavy breathing and persuasive tactics to kill Buffy, everyone decides that this is going to go down at the Bronze. Like, they don't go fight in a graveyard. He's like, presumably there's going to be the showdown, right? And Buffy goes to the Bronze. Like, did they agree prior to this that that's where the fight was going to happen? Like, how did they both know to go to the Bronze?
Well, I mean, I think we've established over the last six episodes that basically it's the only place in town open after 5 p.m.
But so, the graveyard is open, you know, all the time. Like, the cemetery is literally where the vampires come from. And so...
Yeah, but that's not where Angel comes from. And also, every time Buffy has seen Angel in the past, she's either encountered him in the alley behind the Bronze, in the Bronze, or just in this episode, walking her ass home from the Bronze.
I see.
So if I was Buffy and I was trying to encounter Angel,
go to the Bronze.
Every time I've seen him has been at the Bronze, so that would make
I
sense.
I see. That's good detectiving work.
Call me true detective.
You watched and listened to a lot of true crime.
I did.
And so they of course have this party at the Bronze, which is empty. And by party, I mean fight to the death, obviously.
Well, of course, it's empty because we established earlier the
fumigation.
For right. fumigation post cockroach right. crunching party. Exactly. So convenient.
Extremely convenient. So Buffy goes with her crossbow to the Bronze, right? Angel is lurking in the shadows. There's like lots of shadow lurking. They have a whole conversation while he's lurking in the shadows, trying to kind of explain who he is. This whole scene does not make a lot of sense. I mean, I guess, again, right? It's the first season of the show. We're still establishing characters. The whole story arc of everybody has not happened yet. But, like, this is one of those times where I just feel like Angel's could have very easily and quickly solved the problem if he just said, I'm a vampire with a soul. It's a curse situation. Right? Like, from the beginning. Because then Buffy would be like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, instead of playing right? mysterious stranger in the alley and, like, popping up to give cryptic, like, oh, by the way, they're coming right. advice, being like, hey, I know this shit because I'm a vamp, but don't worry, I don't want to make you a snacky snack because I have a soul and it would make me feel bad. Also, I think you're hot, want to go out. You know, it would have solved so many problems.
They just have this whole long, drawn-out conversation, right? And he talks, and he says one of my favorite things ever, right? One of my favorite Angel lines, which is like, after Buffy's like, you hurt my family. He's like, why not? I killed mine. For 100 years, I killed and maimed everyone. And I did it with a song in my heart. And it's just like, you could have just said, like, I was a really evil vampire for a long time. But then I got...
Like, it was in a bad place, man.
I got cursed, right? And... now I have a soul and I feel really guilty about all the things that I did. But instead, it's just this like epic poem of explanation, right? About, and then Buffy's like, oh, so you decided to bite a human again after 100 years or whatever with my mom? And Angel like dismissively is like, I didn't bite her. Like, why would you think that Buffy would think anything other than you standing over her mother's bleeding neck with your vampire face wasn't you? Right?
Right. And this would be a good time to be like, no, so there's this other vampire chick right. who's like obsessed with me. And she really wants to jump my bones just as bad as you do, but like on the dark side. So, you know, she made a snack of your mom and then framed me so that you right. would, you know, dump me. Right. And I would just be right. so sad that I would be like, oh, Darla, please comfort me with your bad vampire self.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, again. The whole point of this episode is communication is really important in a relationship. And if you don't communicate shit like, well, not shit like this, but bad shit can happen. So just talk to people. It solves problems.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh,
end of rant.
No, it's true. And like, well, we also, in this whole montage of Buffy fighting and Angel lurking, right, in the bronze as they discuss his past. Giles, in the interim, has found out that it wasn't Angel who bit Buffy's mom. It was Darla, and Darla's back. And Darla's also in the Watcher Diaries, and she's also a super bad vampire, right? So...
Mm-hmm. Oh, let's not point out the fact that Giles finds out what actually happens because he right. asks questions. Whereas Buffy just hears, oh, your study friend was here, and is like, oh, Angel, instead of saying, oh, you mean that tall, hot one you kicked yeah. out the other night? At which point Joyce would have gone, no, your blonde American Civil War tutor, whatever the fuck she calls herself. And then Buffy would have been like, oh, snap, baby Angel is uh-huh. safe, and yeah, I probably should apologize for accusing him of being, right. being a fiend. Again, communication right. is important.
So Giles enlists the help of Willow and Xander. Because obviously. And mm-hmm. so.
Xander's so helpful. I mean, at right? least Willow can hack shit.
So they all decide to go to the bronze as well. Because. Because the bronze is the meeting place, right? The logic is always just everybody's always at the bronze. Just go to the bronze.
Well, let's assume that they knew Buffy was going there, so they're going to help out / inform Buffy that it wasn't Angel before she makes the mistake of, right. you know, staking him.
So Darla has also now shown up at the bronze. And for one of the only times in the entire series of Buffy, which... on the one hand, was a lovely and delightful break from the otherwise, like, just ridiculous violence of our real world. Darla brings guns to the fight.
Because she's smart. I mean, she's dumb, but she's smart.
Effective killing machines. That's their entire purpose, actually. Mm-hmm. They're a machine designed yeah. to kill something.
And you can dodge a sword or a fist right. a lot easier than you can dodge absolutely. A bullet.
Buffy has a lot of superpowers.
Unless you're Neo.
But as we find out in later seasons, much, much, much later, the really effective killing tools are guns. If you're not fighting vampires. If you're mm-hmm. just killing people, guns kill people. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Darla decides.
But it's okay because
to bring guns to the bronze, which is actually forward thinking, right? She's a forward thinking vampire because bullet mm-hmm. would in fact kill a Slayer, right? and then, but this is before she pulls out the guns. She tells Buffy the whole background of how her and Angel used to bone for several generations, and. Buffy uses this moment to talk about how old Darla looks, right?
Yeah.
Because again, if somebody is threatening your wannabe boyfriend or your relationship you're standing with wannabe boyfriend, the natural inclination
make a snarky comment about how they look
is to make a yeah. snarky ass comment about how they look. Mm-hmm. I say that with full irony, of course. So anyway, Darla's like, oh yeah, we boned for generations. I actually made him. It was a thing. He used to be super evil. now he's just a sicko who's like in love with a slayer and pathetic and sad and you suck. And now I'm going to shoot you with my guns. And actually, as it turns out, Buffy is pretty effective in dodging bullets, or Darla's a super bad shot. She manages to hit Angel on the first try, which doesn't kill vampires. It just hurts them.
Really do much.
And then misses Buffy with every other opportunity. And part of that problem, part of the reason why, actually, and I can say this with some degree of knowledge now, is that she has a gun in each hand, which makes you a less effective shot than if you just had one gun in one hand. Because of how our brains work and how we like aim at things. If we're trying to aim with both our hands at two things. And I learned this recently because I moved to the land where guns are like, people bring fucking guns to the grocery store because you never know. It's so
yeah, that was weird.
They play in the mud and they bring guns to the grocery store. I don't know what to tell you.
And they put sugar in their potato salad or their egg salad.
And that's another situation that we will never get over. But yeah.
But we digress. So, anyway, it's okay. Buffy and Giles and Willow, or sorry, Willow and Giles and Xander are going to burst in just
they
in
burst
time.
Into the Bronze to be absolutely ineffective in solving any problem other than really kind of distracting Darla. from her missing Buffy with her bullets. And then as Buffy's like, oh, Giles does turn on like a strobe light because, you know, they're at the Bronze, which is enough to distract Darla. Mm-hmm. Buffy shoots her with a crossbow but misses the heart. And then Angel comes up behind Darla and stabs her and dusts Darla, which we don't know at the time, but is actually like a pretty big deal. And then the master has a complete fucking conniption in his underground church lair, right? And about it, he's like, this is the worst thing that's ever happened, right? Like, Angel was supposed to, she was my favorite.
She was my favorite.
Angel was supposed to, you know, rule by my side for 1,000 years and bloody blue and everything's horrible and I'm never going to get over this. And then creepy little kid, the anointed one, is like, don't worry, we'll kill everyone. It's fine. This is fine. We'll murder the entire world. Come with me. And creepily leads the master off somewhere. Like, I don't know where they go, but the master feels better. It's a weird situation. So in our final moments of the show, we're back at the Bronze now that the Bronze is presumably cockroach free. Thank God. Everybody's back partying at the Bronze. Willow and Xander are like, so you didn't kill Angel? And she's like, no, but it's just like, you know, we can't be together and it's just too complicated and he's not evil, but also, you know, I'm the slayer and blah, blah, blah. And Willow's like, yeah, that's probably smart, but Angel's right behind you. Like he always is, following you around, kind of like a stalker.
Again, his only two things, hiding in the shadows and brooding. Two best skills.
Buffy like walks over to Angel and they stand really, really, really close to each other. Like I don't understand why the television shows and movies do this. No one ever talks to one another with their faces that close together.
Especially considering that he's much taller than her.
She was really 100% standing on a box for this scene, right? Because if their height differences, the way that their faces are far apart, like there's no way she's not standing on a box for this shot. She's absolutely, or he's sitting in the chair, because there is another scene, because there is another scene in a later season, right, where Angel drops to his knees in front of Buffy and puts his arms around her And on his knees, David Boreanaz is almost as tall as Sarah Michelle Gellar. So, like, the fact that she and him are talking to each other with their noses 2 inches apart tells me that she is standing on a box for sure. Or a chair or a stepladder. Something that's at least 12 inches tall. Because he is easily a foot taller than her. But yeah, so anyway, they talk about how they can't be together because of all the complications of her being a slayer and him being a vampire. And then they make out, because obviously they have to make out, quote unquote, one last time, right? And then it's their goodbye kiss, right?
So dramatic.
Their one last kiss, right? And they pull apart, and she's like, I gotta go, or, you know, whatever. And he's like, it just, and she's like, I know it hurts. And they're like super, super, super dramatic about it. And the best shot ever is that the camera pans slightly down. And what actually was physically painful was Buffy's cross necklace burning into Angel's chest as they made out. And now he has, like, a burn mark in the shape of a cross on his chest from where she pressed into him while they were making out.
So she's effectively branded him while breaking up.
And it is just, it's truly everything my teenage heart wanted in 1997.
So sad. But don't worry, it's not the end of their relationship, because they'll come back. He can't stay away. And despite the fact that Darla just turned to Deuce, she will also appear multiple times throughout this series and come back to life later on.
She has a whole story
on Angel, so it's okay.
Spoiler alert, guys. We're sorry to spoil something 25 years after it happened.
Yeah, in case you missed that part. But can we talk about, okay, so I do enjoy, aside from her problematic wardrobe choices first season, I really enjoy Darla as a character, because she gives no fucks and she's old as shit. I also like the fact that she became a vampire, because after getting money and being able to do whatever she wanted, she got syphilis and was gonna die, and so that's why she became a vampire. So we established, like, right away from the backstory they create for her, that she's slightly promiscuous, because of course, if you're a woman of independent means, you gotta be split.
Well,
around,
especially in, like, whatever it was, 1512 or whenever her character, she was
like 16,
fuck, because
she's old.
It was I thought she was like early Renaissance.
She dies at the turn of like 1600s.
Anyway.
Yeah, she's like a 16th century British chick who comes to North America and gets syphilis. Yeah. And of course, she's turned by the master, which is why the master is real, real sad that she's dead. Because he made her a vampire, like, 400 years ago.
Mm-hmm. But that's,
yeah.
Darla is actually a really, has a really good character arc. I remember hating her in the beginning, though.
She's a very interesting character.
I hated her
arc.
So much.
Yeah. Well, you're supposed to, especially because you love Angel. And you're supposed to hate Darla, because Darla's getting in the way of Angel and Buffy and their true, true romance. And... you know, she wants Angel back. And then even when she reappears, you're supposed to not like her, because she is once again trying to lure your precious, precious Angel baby, you know, to the dark side. But she has, like Cordelia, has a really interesting arc. Both of which involve, you know, being pregnant, because of course that's what women are good at. Yeah, I have problems with that too, but that's a whole other thing.
I just appreciate how watching it in my later years, even though I'm still, it's very hard to get past the just the, you know, beauty that is Angel. I appreciate how Buffy's responses to like take the stand of having to kill him, right? And it made me think of, and it's a good foreshadowing for like season two. But sorry, I was just like thinking about how Buffy is really good at her job, and I admire that about her. I was just thinking about strong women and how Buffy never got pregnant in the entire series. Because that's, anyway, sorry.
Well, she also doesn't have a lot of, I mean, her one right. boyfriend she can't have sex with. All right, so that's out. And then, I mean, she bones Riley enough to raise, like, you know, evil poltergeists in, what, season, like, four. But we're assuming that because he's older and doesn't want responsibility due to his job and, you know, hopefully she is smart, they use protection to avoid...
Well, you know, yeah, and that's what I'm saying.
Unplanned pregnancy. And then she doesn't really have a lot of boyfriends from that point on. Like, post-Riley, she's still hung up on Angel. And she doesn't really do a lot of dating. I mean, and then her other guy that she, you know, bangs a lot is dead and therefore has no functioning sperm. So there's not a lot of opportunity for that saying, kind of thing, like, to happen.
My friend sent me that McSweeney's article, like the Would You Rathers from a couple years ago that every woman have to ask, right? And one of them is like have a career or have a family, right? And I just, like, it just sort of dawned on me right now that, like, of the other characters, of the other main characters that exist in this series, right? Like, centrally focused characters, Buffy's never... In fact, it comes up even when her sister shows up, right? Like that Buffy's family, Buffy's not going to have a traditional family. But both Cordelia and Darla have like several altering pregnancies. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. But I mean, the problems too, right? Is that both the only two pregnancies that we really have on this show are Darla and Cordelia's, both of which occur not on Buffy, but on Angel. And Darla's technically shouldn't happen, right? Because she's a barren vampire because she's dead technically. And Angel has no sperm because, again, dead, right? But they have a kid. And for that kid to be born successfully, she has to die. So she gets pregnant, she dies. Right. Cordelia pregnant. Basically gets like demon raped and has a baby, right? Gets pregnant and then giving birth to that baby ends up in a massive coma.
And then
coma,
she dies.
Right. So she gets pregnant and then gets destroyed and then dies. So really the whole like, you know, you can have a life or you can be a mom thing is real literal because they have, you know, children, not actually by their own design or like because they're like, dear diary, I really want to have a baby, but almost because it's like thrust upon both
literally
of them.
Upon both of them.
And yeah, literally, which is again a whole other problematic issue, especially with how Cordelia gets treated later. But they are forced to become mothers. And it basically destroys their life. So, you know, that's a thing.
Yeah. I'm like,
think about it too much, you know, makes me way too angry.
My mind is kind of exploding right now. Mm-hmm. Well, because, like, I don't have kids, right?
Yeah.
So I just take care of other people's kids a lot. But, like, yeah, I know this is like, so I wouldn't have a, like my perspective on that. I have blind spots. Right. And like, now that I'm thinking about this, I'm like actually fairly boiling with rage as well.
Yeah, because as someone who has a tiny human, it is really hard to balance the I have to be a good mom and do all of this shit and, you know, keep this tiny human alive with I'm a whole person separate from the fact that my womb was able to create this tiny person that I have to keep alive with interests and things that I want to do and places that I want to go and things that I want to explore and books that I want to read in fucking peace for 5 minutes without having to explain for the 455th time why we can't have chocolate at 8 a.m. You know, these kinds of things. And so the whole, you know, pregnancy destroys your life thing.
Yeah.
It's just a little frustrating because, you know, I guess you can if it lets you. And if, you know, our fucking Handmaid's Tale society had its way, it literally would. But yeah, again, that's a whole, I get real ragey when we get towards the like third, fourth seasons of Angel. Especially now. But it's okay. I mean, it's not okay because, you know, fucking society.
It will
society,
be okay as long as we keep calling this shit out, right? Like, we're going to keep saying the same thing. We're going to keep calling out, like, the problematic areas. And we're going to, when people
as
say,
hey,
you have a blind spot in this area because you have not experienced the world the way I have experienced in the world, we say, hey,
we're going to listen
right.
and not just be like,
oh
no, we're
gosh.
Right.
I did not have that experience and I did not see that before. And now I do. Thank you for pointing that out, even though I'm also too now kind of filled with some boiling rage.
I'm glad I could pass
like,
my rage along
fuck?
To you.
Yeah,
you're welcome.
Because in the only season where Buffy actually has to become a mother figure, right? Like, she basically has to choose. It destroys her
life. It destroys her life.
She basically has to choose between killing her baby, right? Essentially, or saving the world. I'm so mad.
Well, don't forget the fact that she also like can't keep up in school because she has to take like a job, you know, what is it? She works at like the fast food place. And so she doesn't have a like, you know, she basically has no life because she goes and does that and then comes home super. There's so many issues. But this episode, if we ignore all that other shit, you get to ignore, I guess you get to appreciate the hotness of
that,
Angel, if that's your thing.
I know,
and
I'm trying to be better.
Not mine, but it could be yours. It's okay. You don't yuck somebody else's yum. He's not my cup of tea, but he is yours, and I'm all for that. I'll be real all over Spike once he shows up until he gets real problematic, at which point I'll be like, fuck this guy, cut his dick off.
They always ruin it.
Which comes later. They do, but it's okay because they're guys and so they ruin it. But next week we get to discuss dangers of the internet in one of my favorite cheesy ass episodes.
It's so good. It's so good and it's so cheesy. And it was our first introduction to like the interwebs and like what kids are doing on the internet now, right?
Right, but it's obviously again written by a grown-up who is not a young person, so it makes
it
hilarious. And it continues our, every episode is, because again, this is season one, they're starting out, so we have every episode kind of focused around one member of our cast. So we had Teacher's Pet, which was all Xander, well, Xander-centric, right? Well, we had Never Get a Boy on a First Date, which is all about Buffy
team.
And her desire to, you know, have a normal Buffy life. And then The Pack, which was all Xander-centric and showed him in his
douche kind of
finest.
Breaky.
Yeah, and then we have this one, which is obviously super Angel-centric because we get his whole, well, not
his
whole backstory, but a giant chunk of it. And
story, we do.
But I'm... And we find out finally what is up with the dude who shows up creepily in alleys and is like, hey, little girl, here, have a present. P.S. Creepy things are happening. And then the next episode will be Willow-centric, which is really exciting.
It's all about Willow's brilliance and sensitivity and her just utter desire to be seen and cared about, right? Because Willow is so, and this is why Willow is, I think I've said this before, but like, I think Willow is actually my favorite character of all of Buffy for all of the seasons. Because
yeah, she's the best character.
She's always herself, right? Like everybody has all this, like, Willow is just always so brilliant and sensitive.
Well, I mean, Anya is always herself too, but Anya's self is...
I mean, she's a great bitch.
It is a fucking piece of work. But she never tries to be... I mean, except when at the beginning when she's actually like a demon. But once she becomes, loses her demon vengeance powers, like, she never tries to hide the herself. Fact that she is just Anya. Yeah. Which makes her both a very cool character and also someone you just really want to ditch at parties all the time. So we'll talk about that next week. And then we get to the only episode that's ever creeped me out on either one of these two shows. Because Marionette's fucking the devil.
It's the worst. It's so hard to watch. Oh.
It's the only one. I don't mind that one where, like, in that one episode of Angel where the guy's eye, literally comes out of its pocket and, like, creeps across town to spy on girls. No problems. No. But a fucking Charlie McCarthy doll that talks for itself, I'm fucking out. I'm like, no.
It's so gross.
No, thank you. I'm going somewhere else. So we'll talk more about that when we get to that. But I think that's it for today. You gushed about Angel.
I really
and we got to finally discover all of his good things.
Sometimes, and she cannot. She has no filter. She can't focus.
It's fine.
Until next time.
So until next time, go out, watch Buffy. Save the world.